Are You Getting On? And welcome to the B2B Brand. My name is Liam Maroney. I am your host, and this is a podcast that deals with, well, you guessed it, B2B brands. I'm going to talk to marketing leaders in some of the most brand-forward companies in our space to understand how they think about brand, how they design and build brand, how they measure it, and everything in between. It's going to be an honest look at how brand marketing is in the B2B tech industry. And on today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Brandon Redlinger, who is the brand new VP of Marketing at Chili Piper, one of the darlings in the tech startup space. It's a great and honest conversation. I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening, and let's get into the episode. Brandon, it is so good to have you with us. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I can't complain. So far, so good. I mean, it's Monday, but we've got a busy week ahead of us.
We have about 75 degrees outside, so it is like a full on. I want to go walking in the sun type Monday. So I'm in a like a springtime mood right now.
I love it. We just had snow this weekend.
Oh wow, we are like on the opposite ends of the spectrum on this one.
Yeah, I built the biggest snowman with my kids this weekend, though.
Literally could not have been more different to my weekend with my son.
Nice.
Well, let's jump into it. I am so excited to chat. What we really want to focus on in this is talking about brand marketing and B2B and really demystifying what happens at really great companies who have really strong brands and great marketers. And I'm excited to talk to you because not only are you working at an incredibly well-branded, powerful, well-known brand, but you also have a track record of working at several other ones just like it. So I'm very excited to chat through it. Before we begin and kind of get too deep into it, would you mind just giving me a little bit of background for anyone who's not familiar on who Chili Piper is and who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with me real quick. So I'm Brandon Redlinger, VP of Marketing at Chili Piper. I've been here, in the seat full-time for, two months now.
All right, so you've got the fresh eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is actually perfect for evaluating.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to get into that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. And then Chili Piper is the company traditionally known for converting qualified leads into actual demand from your website.
Well, succinct and perfect. I love that. All right, so let's get into it. Where I want to start this conversation is I think brand, especially in B2B, is it can often be either a very forgotten entity where it's just not invested in at all. Some cases it's extremely narrowly defined where it's just the logo and there's a brand style guide. And then everything else is performance marketing that's doing the work. Chili Piper is definitely one of the more prominent tech companies in the space. When it comes to brand, how would you describe the way it is discussed internally? Well, like, is brand an active conversation within the organization, or is it something that sort of like is just taken for granted as being part of the way that the company goes? Like, talk to me about how brand exists within the day-to-day.
So brand is something that is on the minds of the whole marketing team and people outside of the marketing team as well. I think it's because they have built a very strong brand and they have that expectation where, yeah, we actually need to keep this up. Now, I do think the strength of any brand is really going to be initially defined, at least in startups, especially earlier stage startups. It's defined by your founders, right? And then it's really executed by the employees. But I really do think how important the company makes the brand is initially defined by the founders. And the brand itself, like brand is one of those things where it's like, it's what people think of you, right? It's defined by your audience more than it is by you. Like, you, of course, do everything that you can to shape it and control it. And brand is your reputation, but at the end of the day, it's what other people think about you and say and the feelings that they have. You're just trying to shepherd that in the right way.
I love that framing. Speaking of shepherding, this I think is an important point. So you mentioned you've been in the role full-time now in the seat for 2 months. And for new marketers coming in, you find yourself in a very interesting position where, to some degree, because it's already a strong brand, there's an amount that you are now a steward of that brand and you have to make sure to continue the things that are good. But you're also very intentionally being brought in to identify what's not good and what those negative perceptions are or missing ones. Talk to me a little bit about what that balancing act looks like.
Yeah, so hopefully a lot of people out there at least know of the Chili Pepper brand and have some sort of association with it. So when I took this new role, I reached out to a bunch of my friends or posted on LinkedIn, and so many people were like, Chili Pepper, that's great. I love their brand. So what do they do? And right, like they figured out the hard part, which is how do you capture people's attention and build trust with your audience? But the other side of that is actually connecting it to problems, as you solve, and use cases that your product helps solve, right? And I've been at companies before that have really strong brands. I've also been at companies that don't have strong brands whatsoever. And I've seen the power of having that brand and not having that brand. And they solved the harder part. But I still want to be able to connect that to problems and use cases that our audience solves. So that is one of my initial observations. And I think a lot of the team, they knew that was a thing. But now it's up to me to, like, I think of it as evolving the brand, right? And I've worked at companies a little bit bigger than Chili Pepper as well, who have more established brands and who have more established, communications departments, where things do have to be a little bit more buttoned up, or you have to go a little bit more by the book. But I will say at the end of the day, it is on us to execute that and to, again, I think it's evolve the brand. It's always going to be changing. It's always going to be evolving. The market changes, your features and your functionality hopefully evolves, and you should always be talking to your customers to make sure that you are evolving with them. And I would say the success of a marketing leader is really dependent on their ability to understand and read and react to the market. So a lot of what I'm doing is, where's the market going and how do we keep our brand going in that same direction?
That's really interesting. I know who you are, but I don't know what you do is such a big gap that it's not unusual. It's such a common problem.
Yeah.
How aware do you think that was internally? How much of your research that you were bringing back in after going down this path was validating beliefs that might have been true, that have been feeding through the sales team, versus I'm an unbiased observer, I haven't been staring at this thing as long as you have, I've got a different perspective?
Yeah. Okay. Good question. So, a few things to dig into here. I've been at companies where that's happened in the past, and like the HR team or someone comes up to me and is like, yeah, like I've got all my friends who don't know what the heck we actually do. And it's like, well, are your friends actually buyers? Right? Or my mom doesn't know it. My mom doesn't understand. That's always the problem. Like if you can't explain it to, or if your mom doesn't understand what you do, you need some more simplified. No, I think that's BS. If your mom was a buyer of your product, then sure, great. Let's make sure your mom understands what we do. But if your mom doesn't understand what you do, or your five-year-old kid, or like I've seen so many like LinkedIn posts that it's like, if XYZ doesn't understand what you do, it's not simplifying enough. Well, kind of, but no, I don't agree with that. I more disagree than I agree. But in my case, there was actually a very specific segment. It was your operations people. So I took that and I said, okay, I went back to the team. I said, here's the feedback that I'm getting. Do you guys think this is true or not? And it turns out a lot of people actually it resonated with that message. I was like, okay, how can we now start to do things that connect our brand a little bit more? So if you followed Chili Pepper on social, mainly social, that's probably why you heard of Chili Pepper, because we have a very strong presence on social, and we can get into why that is and pros and cons of that as well. But you've probably seen them do things like, at Inbound last year, I think they did something around escalator pitch or something like that. A guy got in an escalator and said, hey, do your pitch by the time we get to the bottom of this escalator. Fun thing that got a lot of eyeballs on that, but that doesn't connect to what Chili Pepper does at all. So I want there to be some connection with whatever that we're doing. So I'm planning for Inbound this year. Right, I want to be able to do that fun, interesting, engaging campaign again, but I don't want it to be such a stretch where some people would look at that and go, "Why is Chili Pepper interviewing people about their sales pitches by the time they get to the bottom of the escalator. You know, like, I want it to make sense.
So something you said was really interesting there, but like making sure that points are being hit on that create those associations. How much of that, in your view, is just you're not saying the right things as frequently enough, or that there's more of an overarching strategy that's missing here?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. It's more the overarching strategy, right? And I think some people will call this your brand compass, right? Like, it really does like exactly what a compass is supposed to do. It's pointing you in the right direction. And so another thing you might know about Chili Pepper, and maybe you don't know, but you've resonated with this because you've been at companies before, is like a lot of people have a lot of different ideas, mm-hmm. right? And there needs to be someone at the end of the day, and hopefully it's your marketing leader, that is that person that really is able to stop and objectively say, all right, how does this help us actually achieve some of our long-term company goals? Right, it's a fun idea. Cool. Like I know one. When I was before I worked here, one of the fun things that they did was they went up to people at Dreamforce and they're like, "So, what's your favorite Red Hot Chili Piper song?" And people didn't quite get it, right? Like some people got it, some people didn't, and it was fun. It was fun. It was engaging. It was interesting. It got a lot of eyeballs. But then again, it's like, how does that connect to any problems that we're trying to solve long term? And I want to have that relationship with my team for them to come to me with these ideas, but me be able to still say, you know what, it's not quite the right thing because it doesn't connect to one of our main three priorities. Thanks for the idea. Don't stop coming to me with ideas, but we're not going to execute on this one. And I think a lot of leaders out there, they don't want to like either hurt their people's feelings, or they don't get the other side of that where they immediately shut it down and then their team never comes to them with ideas anymore. And then, you know, then you don't have any creative campaigns. So I think it's a fine balance, you know?
So what kind of, like within the Chili Piper structure, it sounds like you want to give guardrails so that the team knows, like, this is how you can work within these different rule sets, be as creative as you want within them. Yeah. What are they? Give me a sense of what those look like.
Yeah, I really want to have, I like OKRs or MBOs, or like usually your company level OKRs are not going to change that much quarter to quarter. They're relatively the same for the year. And I want to make sure my team knows the company level and then how marketing cascades down from there. And then from there, how each discipline within marketing and then each person within each discipline. So there should be a very direct line from company level goals to what you're doing, right? And I want to make sure people, like you said, it's guardrails, like, you know your guardrails. And if it is like, all we need to do is get our brand out there more. Okay, what does that actually mean, right? Okay, let's break that down a little bit. Why do we want to get our brand out there more? Is it because no one knows about us, or is it because people think we do something different than we don't? Or like, what's the reasoning behind that? And once you really figure out the reasoning, it can help you actually structure the type of campaign that you want to execute.
It's really interesting. You have to narrow it down to what is the core thing that you're trying to solve. Because to your point, you may be getting tons of eyeballs. You mentioned social. Chili Piper is extremely visible on social. What is missing in that outcome?
So having those goals, being very specific on the objectives and what you're solving for, and then it should make people select out those ideas that aren't that great. You don't have to be the one to say, I don't know if this really hits our goals. You can even pose it back to them. Hey, do you think this helps us hit our goal of XYZ? Yeah, you're right. I was like, so a lot of times for me, my job is just to ask the teams the right question and help guide them in the right way. And you could even say like, okay, I like this idea. How could we get them to do XYZ? How can we get this to be more of a direct response campaign? Or how can we tie this to a very specific product? Because we're going to market with this product at this time, you know? So it's just guiding them a little bit more. It's just having that person to help guide a lot of those ideas and campaigns.
So I'm curious, as a new leader, and I've certainly had this happen to me internally, you find yourself being seen a little bit as the lightning rod of anyone who wants to shake things up with the brand, where you're the person that going like, oh, finally, okay, here's what we need to do. We need to abandon this. How have you been the receiver of internal criticism about the brand and feelings? How do you navigate how much of that you entertain versus how much of it you reject?
Yeah, that was a good question. I think a large part of the first 60 days here already has been just like going on that listening tour, as they say, right? And I want to talk to employees. I want to talk to customers. I want to talk to prospects. I want to talk to people who didn't buy our solution and decided to go with someone. I think those are the most interesting conversations, to be honest. And then like a lot of what you're doing as a leader is listening to all those different data points and then synthesizing them and then trying to make your own sense of them. And a lot of what you're doing is connecting those dots. So sometimes it's, yeah, you're right. There's a big obvious gap. There's something we need to do about it right now. Sometimes it's, you know what? It seems like we do have the right strategy. There's just this one really loud person who has very strong opinions and they're going to be that squeaky wheel. You know, so I think it's dependent so much case by case, but you as the marketing leader really, I really don't think your strategy, like people want to come in and they want to have immediate impact, but you shouldn't change your strategy within the first 90 days of you being in the seat. I really don't think that's a good idea because everyone else has so much more context and so much more information about the business than you do. I'm always hesitant about those leaders who come in and say, okay, here's the strategy that we need to deploy right now, and I already have the playbooks that worked at my last company, right? Like, it drives me crazy when people try to come in and do
so that. The extra context that people have, that's an interesting point. I think there's another side to that too, which is that there can be people who've been staring at it for a little bit too long internally, who may have gotten just bored because they're just internal and they see more of it than the outside world. Have you experienced that?
Well, funny that you mentioned that because I ran into that exact thing not too long ago here. So at Chili Pepper, there was a lot of autonomy and power for people to take responsibility for things. And the design team came and said, hey, we have a brand that is the visual identity specifically, the visual identity of the brand. It feels a little old. I think it's time to refresh that. And I said, I don't know, is that true? Because I'm reminded of a story. I think it's Henry Ford, but when he was when his marketing team was coming to him to get feedback on marketing campaigns, he goes, man, I think this is really getting a little old. And his marketing team goes, we haven't even put this into market yet. You know, and it's just he's seen it so many times and he's the person that's most exposed about it. And he's thinking about it way more than anyone else. So sure, he's going to think it's getting old before anyone else does. And that goes same with your company and same with, like, in our case, the visual identity from the design team. But the other thing too, to continue the story, is here we do have something called decision memos. So anyone can weigh in on a decision memo. It's basically a brief that outlines the state of things and the problem and then solutions to that certain problem. And then anyone at the company can weigh in on it. And then they weighed in. Everyone said, hey, I think design 2 is the best design. It's fresh. It's new. It's got this retro feeling. It's the 70s vibe. It's psychedelic vibe. It's Scooby-Doo. And I said, okay, of your options, I think I like that one the best, but I don't like this option as one for Chili Pepper. Because if you started out and you said, okay, what are those feelings? What are the emotions that we want to evoke with our brand? I guarantee you the words would not be psychedelic and, you know, 70s retro Scooby-Doo. So I think we went through this a little backwards. So how can we actually create a visual identity refresh that evokes these feelings that we really are going for?
I want to give credit to that because that's a tougher position than I think a lot of new leaders appreciate, because you're now having to do exactly what you said you don't want to do, be the person coming in going like, I'm right, you're wrong. But you do have to take an objective position. That's not an easy balance, because it's very easy to just agree with the groupthink to be part of the club.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing about this too is, again, this goes out to everyone. Marketing's not a democracy, right? Like, I really do not believe that. I don't think anyone who has zero classical training in marketing, or like, everyone thinks they're a marketer. Everyone thinks, because I've been marketed to, because I've consumed marketing material, I now have a strong opinion about what marketing is. So we have people from engineering to sales to SDRs weighing in on this decision memo. And yeah, all of them are saying option two, option two, option two. Well, I mean, not all your options matter, like, are equal weight. Sorry, I don't give a shit if the sales guy thinks like, you know, I want to hear from the marketer specifically. So sure, you have a wall of twos, but if me and your two co-founders say, no, it's not two, sorry, we're going to win on that, you know?
Marketing is not a democracy. I love that. I also love that you mentioned talking to people who did not buy Chili Piper. And I think that's such an important point, because it's such an easy one to miss. There's all this advice on LinkedIn that I've certainly always had a bit of a problem with, which is the, you know, be provocative, be interesting, be memorable. But that's great in terms of, well, who bought you because of that? But who didn't buy you because of that? Like, there's an mm-hmm. angle where you can make a provocative, edgy brand turn people off at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. So what I ran into having a strong brand, talking to customers, was people wanted me to hear they love my brand. That's not helpful. That's not, I'm not coming to you because I want validation. I'm coming to you because I actually want useful, interesting feedback. And so instead of saying, who's our best customer? And of course they're going to say good stuff, right? Like, I'm going to go to my team and say, who's our most honest customers? You know, who are the critical customers out there? And then, yeah, I'm actually going to go to, since I know a decent amount of people in the space, I can go to them and say, hey, I know you didn't buy Chili Piper. I'm looking at, you know, the close-off opportunities within the last year at Chili Piper. You didn't buy us. Can you tell me why? And they are going to be, if I know them, they are going to be a little bit more honest about that. So yeah, it gives me more actionable feedback. And sometimes it is, you know what? I got on the phone with you because of your brand. Like, that's one of the benefits of having a strong brand. You're automatically in the conversation, right? You have a seat at the table, and now it's up to you to win. Then they go, yeah, it's because of XYZ features. It's like, okay, we really need to figure out, do our value propositions match what we're actually delivering? And that was the bigger challenge that we had. It was one product specifically, actually.
So the product is something I wanted to touch on, because I think in the tech space, certainly, there's a much more direct relationship between product and the brand than there is maybe in other markets, where marketing is dictating what the product should be. It's not the same in tech. How much do you think they have to be very aligned? Like, should the brand experience match the product experience? Should they be one and the same? Does it matter? Are they separate entities as far as the buying goes?
Yeah, I don't think it's separate. So, you know, product, in a way, you know, is the heart of a brand. In many software companies, you know, the product, like, it is inseparable, right? And this is really because the features of the product, the usability, even the interface, the technology, like the innovation of the technology itself, can really help you define that brand. But at the same time, brand extends beyond the product itself, right? So I think they are inextricably linked, and you should think of them in that way. But there is a place where the product leaves off and the brand continues.
An example of that I always find really interesting, where I think a lot of companies get brand wrong in tech, is that they, if they're doing something serious, which by all accounts Chili Piper is, the consequences of it not working as a product are severe. But that can lead a lot of companies to then say, well, therefore our brand has to be serious because we do serious things. And then there's a lot more restriction on that. But that's definitely not the case with the Chili Piper brand. It is very fun and energetic, but does serious things as a product. How do you marry those two together?
Yeah, I still think it goes back to the initial feelings from the original founders, right? So we have two co-founders here, and they both are, they're willing to take more risks, and whether that is just the visual identity itself, the campaigns that we run, the slogan, the taglines, etc. I also came from my company right before this. I mean, you'll be able to easily figure out which company this is, but you know, we were in the talent acquisition and the HR space, and the founder he was very hesitant to post things online. You know, he was very hesitant for other people to judge him. And the first thing that I saw when I came and joined that company was, well, this looks very like a boring corporate brand. Can we do anything else with this? Can we relate, make this more relatable to people? Because at the end of the day, talent acquisition and HR, we're solving people problems. And it was really hard to get anything done there because of just those initial feelings and viewpoints by the founder. I'll tell you another story. My first campaign that I wanted to launch there, I said, become a marketing Jedi, and they're like, sorry, we can't use Jedi, that's Disney trademark, they're a litigious company. Okay, become a marketing ninja. Ninjas are culturally appropriating, we can't use the word ninja. Become hiring all-star. Well, the majority of our audience is females, and that's more of a masculine term, so we can't, don't say all-star. Jesus Christ, like what can I say? Like be better at hiring. Like, yeah, that's a great message, you know? And then here I can say whatever I want. Like Alina's like, the founder's like, I don't really care. Like I trust your judgment. You know, and that's such a refreshing feeling.
I want to go back to the sort of a more measurement view of this, because you said something that was really, really interesting, which was that brand gets you in the room and then it comes down to the features and functionality. How much do you feel the value? To what degree can you quantify how much is worth putting into your brand efforts?
Yeah, okay, that's a good question. I still feel like it's one of those things where you do have to be hitting your marketing numbers in order to continue to do a lot of these brand things, because if you're missing all your numbers but you have a fun, engaging brand, arguably you're putting your resources in the wrong basket there. So I still like the just general rule of thumb that people put out there, a quarter of your budget, or some people say a quarter, some people say 20%, some people say a third, but like in that ballpark, some of that does have to go to brand, because I do think more and more people are realizing that brand and demand are not as unlinked as people think. And I remember I was actually looking back at some of my just old notes from my Engageo days, and in 2017 I never published it, but I had this blog that I wanted to write about why brand and demand are not that separate. And now, like, it's a pretty common like thought process.
I feel like I remember you doing that on a whiteboard video on LinkedIn, like at Engageo. I remember those videos vividly with you and John. And I feel like I remember.
Yes, yeah, there you go. We talked a lot about it. And actually, I mean, speaking of John Miller, I mean, you and I were just at Golden Hour, and I think it was John Miller on stage when he was saying that when your brand is strong, you can have an average demand motion and still see success. But if you have a weak brand and a strong motion, you still might not see success.
I've always found it so interesting that so much of the tech industry went down this like A/B testing performance marketing mindset where like the exact button you were going to use and the color and the language, if people already know who you are, understand what you do, and have a favorable opinion, the exact wording isn't quite as critical as it is when you lack it entirely.
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
So you talk about this quarter of the budget that is kind of going towards brand. What does that mean in practice? Does that mean that it's going into a, we're not going to measure it in the same way we would measure more performance demand gen things? Or are you still assigning things that are proxies for brand health that that go along with those efforts?
Yeah, so I do like to try to explicitly split those out and say, all right, these are the pieces of my budget where do not try to measure your ROI. Like, you're not going to be able to measure our ROI here. So when I get approval for that budget, I set that expectation up front. This is going to go into this brand bucket, and you should not try to measure the results here because it's not going to work. And there are certain things too where it has really strong benefits that, again, are not measurable, but the founders can feel those. I'll give you an example is like a podcast like this. I did a podcast at one of my companies. It was the top RevOps podcast around. And we had so many people that wanted to work at Revenue.io because they listened to our podcast and like, okay, these guys, they have fun on the podcast. They're actually really smart and they know what they're doing. This would be a fun company to work for. So in that sense, it's like, okay, we're saving the company a lot of money on recruiting now because we've helped the corporate branding side of things, and people want to work here because of the podcast. And then, of course, your attribution. A podcast is never going to show up because they hear you on a podcast. What do? They open a browser and they just type in. So that's going to show up as direct traffic. It's not going to say this traffic came from podcasting. And then, attribution is a whole nother whole nother beast. And,
yeah, especially with brand, because it's not a thing you do today that affects something tomorrow. It's a thing that affects everything going forward, but in a very non-linear, messy, all sorts of direction ways. Are you looking at things over long timelines in any way? Like, are you in any way saying things like, because I know the B2B tech space does not have the luxury of the kinds of consumer panel research that large entities do. So like, we're not doing very legitimate brand lift studies and things of that nature, but are you way trying to associate a metric, brand search queries, organic traffic, anything over time that would help you point in a direction?
Yeah. So the ones that I do look at, like those two, like you said, increasing traffic, and then our brand search. And you can also look at things like impression share, like that sort of thing are pretty easy. Another one that I like to measure, and I just reported to the board that this went up, is actually earned media. Like, these are people that are organically talking about you, and those sorts of things you can measure. There's a bunch of tools out there to measure
that. Talk to me a little bit more about that, because I think there's an old school idea that earned media is like, look how many placements we got through our PR efforts, and we got 3 articles in, you know, like Wired and things like that. Like, what do you mean by earned media in the sense that you're talking to the board?
Yeah, so there's placed, like, yeah, we went out and pitched Wall Street Journal and Forbes and Entrepreneur Magazine, and then we got 10 placements this quarter. But if people are, so we don't have a traditional media relations function like that, but we get mentions all the time. And then since we're so prominent on LinkedIn and we work with LinkedIn influencers, we can actually look at the impressions that they get and engagement rate on those posts. But then we also have a lot of people who mention our content or the podcast or the newsletter or just anything else about us. Like, we did an April Fool's post on LinkedIn.
I remember that. That kind of, that's so good.
It blew up, and then like, so many people started talking about that, like a post from a company account that got over 2,000 organic engagements, right? Like, that's unheard of for a company profile. So, of course, a lot of people went out and started talking about it. I think there were at least 3 podcasts, 2 additional newsletters, and a lot of just posts, LinkedIn posts about it. or other people resharing, like non-Chili Piper employees resharing that post, right? Like that's something I can actually track in a quantifiable way.
I think it's really refreshing to hear that, because I think for so long that would have fallen into the bucket of vanity metrics. But I've always felt that
totally.
It's only a vanity metric if the context behind why it's valuable is missing.
100%. So I think followers, asked me 3 years ago, I probably would have said follower count is a vanity metric. And then I started to change my mind at my last company. And then here, it's definitely not a vanity metric, because we have, like, I view our LinkedIn followers more valuable than our email list, because they're a lot more engaged. Because we have 66,000 followers on LinkedIn, also relatively unheard of for company posts or company accounts, right? But that is the place where we are going to get our message out there, and people really enjoy engaging with us on LinkedIn. So if you looked at just standard benchmarks for post engagement, ours doubles your standard engagement rate. Right? Things like that tell us, yes, this is actually a valuable channel for us. So I think, like you said, the right context and used the right way, LinkedIn follower count is no longer a vanity metric.
So on the context piece, one thing I'd love to get your thoughts and advice on, if there's someone listening to this who's at an organization where it feels that brand is non-existent, everything is quantifiable, outcome, lead metrics, and they are eager to change that, what steps would you recommend someone take in order to win this internally, educate internally, get some room for experimentation? How would you start that?
So I think those internal conversations, like you need to know what the stakeholders care about most. And then you can start to test things. Like I'm all about testing as quickly as possible, as at low risk as possible, and then iterating from there. So you can do some small tests to get directional feedback quickly. And then if it is successful, you can go to your CEO or even if it's your CMO who doesn't believe in this, and say, I'm getting these small wins. Here's what I've done so far and the resources. And then you put together a plan and say, if you give me XYZ budget or resources, here's what you can expect. And here's my hypotheses about why. And then here's how I'm going to measure that. And then we're going to revisit this in 30 days. And if we hit our success criteria, you're going to do this for me. But if we hit our failure criteria, then we're going to cut it. And I agree to that, right? And if you agree to that for both of them, and then go run that and then stick to it. You can't say, we didn't meet our success criteria, but it's because I didn't set it up properly. Like, I got to do X, Y, Z. Like, you're not going to get a second chance, especially if this is your first time doing it, you know? So be really thoughtful with how you put these campaigns together. But again, like, have a hypothesis, have a very thoughtful way to test those hypotheses, set your success and your failure criteria up. And then I think if it's a low risk bet, your CEO or CMO or whoever is going to have a harder time saying no to that. And again, especially if you're actually hitting your numbers. If you're not hitting your numbers, it's probably most beneficial for you to figure out how to go hit your numbers first. Like, if you want to keep your job, go hit your numbers first.
Oh, that's such good advice.
I also do think there's a way to disguise brand campaigns as demand gen campaigns.
Okay, you have my full attention. Go.
Like, this goes back to what we were kind of talking about. Like, I think you can do both at the same time, right? Like, we've done campaigns before where it makes a lot of noise, but it also gets us these direct response. Let's see, what's the best? So Sears Decisions 2019, I think it was, in Austin. I mean, one of the things that we did that got us a lot of coverage, but it was an ABM campaign, was I took our target buyers from our top 20 target accounts. I printed their faces off in this big, just life-size, like you know, so their face, put it on a paint stick, and I put it all around our booth. And then it was just, it turned into this fun campaign. I called it Find Your Face. And we tagged people on social, and we emailed them, and we got so many people talking about this campaign because it was a fun campaign, and we got a lot of coverage on it. But at the end of the day, what it actually did was people came to the booth and they actually found their face. And on the back, it was like, okay, you could either win $20 gift card or these Bose headphones. But then you'd have people walking by that are like, wait, that's my boss. My boss isn't here, but like, can I take a picture? Can I send it to my boss? I still got in front of them, even though they weren't there. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was so successful that we ran out of faces the first day that I had to that night. Instead of going to our happy hour, I had to go to Kinko's and I had to print a bunch more out. And our sales reps at the same time, they were so happy that we did that. And they were actively asking, okay, I've got this buyer here. Can you do this person now? I was like, it turned into such a great campaign where, again, it was a fun brand thing that gave us a lot of exposure, but at the same time, it was an ABM and direct response campaign.
That is fascinating. I love that example. So the last question for me, looking in across the industry, you're lucky to be in an organization that embraces brand and risk-taking and believes in that. There is a lot in the industry that is not there, like to your point of hitting the numbers. A lot of people who are just struggling to do that, and it can feel a bit defeatist. Like, it can definitely be a low morale time for a lot of people. But as you look at the industry, mm-hmm. where it's going, what you are seeing from your position, it feels like there's a brand conversation happening now that hadn't been happening previously. How much of that is talk mm-hmm. versus do you feel there's some change occurring here that you're excited about?
Yeah, I think so. I do think a lot of companies that are doing it right, the more success they see, and then the more that they are building in public and sharing those successes, yeah, the more other companies are going to slowly warm up to the idea of, yeah, we should invest more in brand. When you have really successful use cases like, oh gosh, who are some of my favorites out there? A Gong comes to mind. I mean, Chili Piper. I did this exercise at my last company. I was listing a bunch of brands that I really liked, and Chili Piper was actually one of them, you know, because it's a very strong, distinct, unique brand and everything that they do with chilies now. And that's a fun thing that you can now do. There's so many different plays off of chilies and hot sauce and spicy, et cetera, et cetera. So there's, I used Chili Piper as an example at previous companies.
That's you couldn't ask for a better testimonial than that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. I really appreciate the time. It was, I think, a really informative view into, it's easy to look at brands who have really, really strong presence like Chili Piper, but to also still acknowledge that there is a strategy has to be applied even underneath that. It's not enough to just be visible and loud and memorable. You have to be associated to things that actually matter to the business. So I think it's refreshing to see that it's not about how much money do you have or how big is your team, because to be clear, the Chili Piper team is a small but mighty team and is punching above its weight.
Exactly. Yeah, I appreciate that. And the other thing I would say with, for people really looking at investing more in brand too, is like, you really do have to be thoughtful with those emotions that you do want to evoke and how you're going to evoke those, and make sure like those are, I was gonna say on brand, but like, you know, but like it does have to be thoughtful how you do it. It's not just let's go make noise in the market like that. I think that is part of branding, but if that's the goal, you've kind of missed the point, you know.
That's a wonderful soundbite to leave it on. This was such an interesting conversation. Thank you so much for joining.
Yes, thanks for having me.